Okay, well, I'd like to speak tonight about this very important topic on how to foster a vocation among your own children, in your own family. And I'll speak, you know, from my own personal experience of what my mom and dad did, and also what I've seen in other families where there was a priest or religious sister in the family. And it's something that we should always be doing every day, is praying for vocations, to every day for the vocations to the priesthood and religious life. The Lord said that the harvest is great, but the laborers are scarce. Pray that the Lord of the harvest will bring laborers into his vineyard. So the Lord says the first and foremost thing we should do for vocation is to pray for them. Just pray to the Lord of the harvest. I once asked a group of CCD kids to find for me a vocation. And the kid said, is that the same as a vacation? And I said, well, tell me the difference. He says, a vacation is where you relax and have fun. A vocation is when you don't relax and don't have fun. I said, that is not true, because if you go to the Carmelites, the poor fairs, they're the ones that are the happiest people in the world, right? They're filled with love, peace, and joy. They radiate happiness. So if you're doing God's will, you'll be at peace, and you'll have that inner joy that the world cannot give, that peace that the world cannot give. So tonight we'll hopefully shed some ideas on how to promote the vocation, a vocation in your child, perhaps to the priesthood, to religious life, to marriage. I'm sure a lot of your kids are called to marriage, or even some to the celibate life in the world. I really attribute my own vocation to three things. My family, which a family is what's called the seedbed of vocations. The family is the first seminary, as the Pope said. The seminary is the place where the seed grows. So the family is the first seminary where the seed of vocation is conceived and where it grows. So my vocation, I believe, came from my family, and then going to Christendom College was just a great blessing for me, and being involved with the Legion of Mary since I was 10 years old. The last 32 years I've been involved with that. So those three things, I've always attributed my vocation to those three things. I didn't feel called to the priesthood until probably the end of my junior year, and during that summer, and then going back to my senior year at Christendom. And that's when I felt my vocation. I never really had thought about becoming a priest. My dad said once when I was sitting on the curbside, and he and I were just talking, watching the traffic go by, and the big dump truck, you know, the trash collector's truck came up. And I always loved that, because the guys would jump off the back, take the trash, throw the trash in there, and then they throw your trash can on the lawn. I thought that was the best thing. So he said, what do you want to become when you grow up? I said, either a priest or a garbage collector. And of course, you know, they're really not that far apart. Because every Saturday people come and give their sins over, and then we get rid of their sins and give them a clean soul. So a lot of ways we do take people's garbage, their sins, to the Lord, get rid of them, and make things better. Even in high school, I think some people thought I might become a priest. One of my religion teachers, I never went to a Catholic school. I went to an all-boys private Quaker school, one of the friend schools, you know, like Chelsea Clinton went to. I didn't go to a Chelsea Clinton, but I went to all-boys private Quaker school in Philadelphia. And one of my religion teachers, I guess, was talking to my dad one day, and I guess he was asking where I wanted to go to college, and he said, well, maybe you should go to St. Charles in Overbrook, which is St. Charles Seminary. And first, I just went way over my head. I didn't even realize thought that I might have a vocation. But I didn't really discover the vocation until, you know, almost graduating from college, where I know some priests, they knew they were going to be a priest from the time they were 3 years old. Like Father Fasano at St. Andrew's, he used to play Mass when he was 3 years old. And he knew when he was 3 years old he was going to become a priest. Other friends of mine didn't know they were going to be a priest until they were lawyers for 5 or 10 years or doctors, and then they gave it up and entered the seminary after that. Mine, though, it was in college. That's where I felt called. I mean, we did play Mass as kids. My sister was a priest, though, because she was older and bossier. And she was, you know, and then I was the altar boy, and my other sister was the congregation. So we used to take the Wonder Bread, growing up in Philadelphia, take the Wonder Bread, we would roll it up, and then we would take a glass, you know, something like that, and then put the glass over, and then take that, and then we would use that for host. And so we did play Mass all the time. That's a good thing to do. You can foster that, especially if you're interested in women priests. Luckily, well, they both got married, and I'm the one who became the priest. I don't think that they... I'm sure that when I was a child, I think my dad had said once, I said, oh, if I become a priest, I think you'd be very happy. And I think he said, oh, yeah, I would be very happy. So I think he did let me know that if I chose that way, they'd be very happy with that. But they never, yeah, that was about it. That was about it. So I think when I came home from college and told them I was really thinking about this, I think they were a little bit surprised, a little bit very happy, but I think they could maybe saw that there was a possibility of that. The other thing I did forget to mention that came up when I talked to my mom was the role of my grandmother, because she lived to be 93 years old, and she lived with us, and we took care of her. She was completely deaf. Most of her sight was gone, and she said about 12 rosaries a day. That's all she did. Pray one rosary after another, one after another, and she'd say, this one's for you, and this one's for your sister, and I'm going to say this one for your other sister, and I'm going to say this one for the poor souls in purgatory. So my grandmother was the powerhouse of prayer in the family, so I would, when I think of my own family being a seedbed of vocations, I would have to say my grandmother was really the suffering servant, the one who carried the cross. And it is so true that whenever you have a family that has some difficulties or challenges, let's say taking care of a sick parent, or when you have, let's say, a child with Down syndrome, I think of the Vanderwoodies with little Joseph, who's now Big Joseph, our altar boy, and they have a son, a priest, Father Tom Vanderwood, the oldest son that is a priest in their family. So whenever you have, let's say, Bishop Sheen also said this, whenever you have a family with a special situation, let's say taking care of a sick child or relative or one of the brothers or sisters is ill, God gives extraordinary graces to the rest of the family. And you'll tend to notice that vocations come from families where there is somebody carrying the cross in that family. And that could be the mom, the dad, it could be a grandparent, it could be one of the brothers or sisters or siblings. So my grandmother was definitely, I think, a major role in her prayers for me that helped me out. And I think she probably always thought I was going to become a priest, too. I think she always thought that. I guess she just presumed when I went off to college that I was in the seminary. But when I would come home with different girlfriends, you know, or bring them home for dinner and things from Christendom, only good Catholic girls, of course, you know, ones that went to daily Mass and we prayed the rosary and stuff together, I think she was a little bit concerned. I said, well, what is this? But then I think before she died when I was, I think, just about a junior or a senior in college. That's when I was definitely on my way to the priesthood was then. It was, right? And all of a sudden, yeah, that was, well, that's about right, because she died in 1985, and I graduated from Christendom in 86. So that was right about the same time. So I guess I could resist her prayers on earth, but not from heaven. Well, like St. Therese always said, I'll do much more good from heaven than I could ever do on earth. So if you have a loved one, a mom or a dad or grandparents that died and you really miss them, they can do a lot more for you now than they ever could when they were living, because they know you so much better. They can pray for your special intentions and special needs. So to answer your question, I would say that I think that the environment that I grew up in was always supportive and nurturing of a vocation, sort of quietly but never overtly. I never had that, because I know both my mom and dad were very supportive of a vocation. I'm sure there are cases where one of the parents might not be Catholic and might not encourage that. I really don't know. I've never had that experience, so I don't know how really that would affect it. But I would say God will always win out. I would say that even if one of the, you know, if the mom's faith is strong enough, that's going to inspire the child so much more. And
you know, with God on your side, on the side of the child, that child is really called. They're going to follow that vocation, even if the mom or the dad might not be Catholic and might not encourage it. But I think the mom or the dad that are Catholic just have to step up and do some extra prayers to make up for that. But if there's a vocation there, God will make it happen and help it happen. Yeah, that's true. So they can discern sort of who has the faith and who doesn't. And if they don't have the faith, they'll just say, well, that person just doesn't have faith. I think the role of the father is so important. I mean, I think obviously the mother is indispensable as the heart of the home for fostering a vocation in that seedbed, that first seminary of the family. And the mother is obviously so important. But I think the role of the father is crucial. And I'm sure you've read studies where if the father is a man of great faith, it's so much easier for the kids to be men and women of faith. So if your dad has a strong faith, generally speaking, the kids will have a strong faith. Now, it's possible, even if the dad doesn't have faith, that the mom can pass on the faith to the kids. But I'll tell you, if the dad is a man of faith, then that's a great blessing. My own dad, as you know, being so active in the Legion all those years, and then writing, you know, making 4 record albums, songs about Our Lady and St. Joseph and the Lord, and writing poetry books and everything, that was a big help, you know, I think, to me. So you get your faith a lot from your dad. It's not, you know, if you don't have a dad that doesn't have, if you have a dad that doesn't have faith, it's not a hopeless case. But I would just say it's so much easier if a dad is a man of faith. You know, so powerful. Yeah, it's right. I mean, it did remind me of something that I think a lot of you have so much more going than like families we had back in my day, because we had very few homeschoolers back then. That was really unheard of. And we have so much support now for our homeschooling families. That's a wonderful thing. Also, we have some very good Catholic schools around where the kids can really learn their faith through Catholic schools. Or if not, through, we have an excellent religious ed program, CCD. So all these things are to your advantage that I think will even foster more vocations in your kids. And then with Seton High School so close, I mean, that's a great place to send your kids. Also, I mean, in this day and age, too, I think one of the best things you can do for your kids is to make sure they go to, like, either Christendom or Steubenville or some other good Catholic college. If you want them to not lose their faith, make sure you say, out of all the colleges, these are the two that you're allowed to go to. We'll pay for them. If you want to go to, you know, somewhere else, you just have to pay for that yourself and see if that helps. But even if you have to force the kids to go to Christendom or Steubenville or Thomas Aquinas or the University of Dallas, or there's a lot of other good ones around now. So, I mean, look at those options and say that, you know, these are your options. I'll let you choose one of these 5 colleges. And I would really do that because so many kids do lose their faith in college. They really do. I mean, but, you know, even though nowadays, even in our own diocese, you know, if you send somebody to George Mason, we have a very good Catholic campus ministry at Mason. I mean, excellent. Marymount, Mary Washington College. Those, of course, are all in the Arlington Diocese, because we have very good priests, very good campus ministers. Now, if you go to some other diocese, I can't guarantee that. But I would say that the colleges is a key. I mean, I don't know if I would have ever been a priest if it wasn't for Christendom. I think Christendom was just, for me, just a great blessing, studying Catholic Church history, doctrine, all philosophy, theology. I mean, that was just really perfect for me at that time. And I know many of you. Yeah. So send your kids to one of those 5 good Catholic colleges and you'll be all set. Yeah, okay. Catholic Medical School. Anybody? Well, there are Catholic medical schools. I would have to do some research on which ones were the best, which ones were the most loyal to the church. You can. I would recommend that. And I would even say, which you just reminded me of, that, I mean, a lot of kids, or the parents just say, you're going to one of these 5 colleges at least for a semester. And if you don't like it after 1 year, then you can transfer somewhere else. But usually what happens is that 9 times out of 10, they love it, and then they stay. But I would say, even before, before medical school or whatever, they could, you know, or before law school, try to get them to do an undergrad at one of these places. But there are some very good places now that are really shaping up. Like even Catholic U is very good in philosophy, and I'm sure Notre Dame might have a very good department as far as law, or, you know, Ave Maria College. I mean, there's so many different places now that you can send your kids. The rosary, the spiritual reading, the discussion. My dad was our president of the Junior Legion group for years, and I was raised on his weekly talks about the faith, and that's how we learned the faith. So I didn't go to Catholic school from second grade to 12th grade, so I went to, I first went to a Catholic Montessori school with my two sisters, and then that became an all-girls school. In second grade, they wouldn't let me stay after second grade, so I had to leave. And so then my parents said, well, let's try the local Catholic school. So they sent me to my parish school, St. Patrick's in Norristown, and that was a terrible experience for me. The nuns there were very very difficult. They're Immaculate Heart of Mary nuns, and they were just so unreasonable. They were, I remember, one child forgot the homework, so all of us had to stay after school a half an hour to work on something, and if one person acted up, everybody got punished, and it was just it just was not a good experience for me. So I, thank God, got transferred out of there, and then my parents found this Quaker school, this all-boys private school down in Philadelphia, which was right next to the school that my sisters were still going to. And I loved it there, so I was there for 10 years, but never had any more Catholic education as far as CCD. I didn't go to CCD, hate to admit that, from the time I was in second grade. I never got confirmed in eighth grade either, because I wasn't in a Catholic school. I didn't get confirmed, I think, until I was in 10th grade. And my sister was in eighth grade, and my other sister was in 12th grade. So at our confirmation, I was the second tallest person. My 12th grade sister was the tallest person, and then I was the next one in line, and then my other sister, and then the rest of the class. So luckily we were able to work it out. We finally got confirmed eventually, but that's just the way it happened for me. So I never had any more Catholic education until I went off to college. But we lived the faith at home. My parents knew the faith. They passed on the faith. They taught me the faith primarily through our weekly Legion meetings. But we also read quite a few, wonderful Catholic books. I know when I was a kid, they gave me a picture Bible, and I would really recommend that you get your kids a nice children's Bible. I just devoured that. I just loved the Bible stories, David and Goliath and Samson and Cain and Abel and all those stories. So that's something to do. Give your kids good books to read. I love reading the lives of the saints. Make sure you name your kids after saints if you can, so they have role models and examples that they can follow. And I always love reading about St. Francis or St. Joseph. So growing up, I love the stories too, the Tan books, Mary Fabian Windeatt books, the stories of the saints. They had one of St. John Vianney and Louis de Montfort. So I enjoyed reading all those books. I know my parents gave me that Father Robert Fox prayer book when I was a kid, so I used that every day as well for daily prayers, and that had a nice collection of prayers. Another book that was very helpful that my parents passed on to me was called My Way of Life. It's St. Thomas Aquinas. It's sort of a summary of the writings of Thomas Aquinas. But we also had lots of good Catholic videos, lots of good Catholic music. The Catholic videos, the Song of Bernadette, the story of Fatima, the Ten Commandments, and then later on other Catholic videos that came out, so we would watch these things on a regular basis every year. So I think these are ways that my parents helped to teach the faith to me through the books, through I love tapes and Catholic videos, music. So these are great ways to teach the faith to your kids. The next letter is I, and that stands for the interior life. The interior life, which is a life of prayer. I don't think a child can really discern his or her vocation unless they begin to pray and be open to God. So what can you do to foster the interior life of your children? Well, encourage them. Teach them how to pray. When you're there together as a family, when you wake up in the morning, I know my mom would always come in to wake us up before school, and we would say the morning offering together. Lord, we offer you today all my prayers, works, joys, and sufferings of this day, and we would say that together. And then we would always have grace, you know, grace before meals in the family. And we did things like other prayers, the Advent wreath. We always did the Advent wreath lighting and the Advent wreath prayers. We always had the Advent calendar where we would open up and read that scripture verse or eat that little piece of chocolate behind every window. We would, my sister tried to do the Jesse tree. My older sister tried to do the Jesse tree. I was maybe not that interested in that at the time. So, but she was pretty good at it. She cut out all the things and she did that. And we always did the straws in the crib at Christmas. You know, we always did that. And that was very important to us. I think that really did help us to do acts of kindness, acts of charity. Whenever we did extra prayers, we would put that straw in the crib. And we always had the manger scene, and then behind it, the big bag of straw. And whenever we said an extra prayer, like a decorated the rosary or vacuumed or did the dishes, put that piece of straw in the crib. So that was definitely, I think, very formative in my time growing up. The other thing that we did in our family was the penance beads. St. Therese had them as well. They're very beautiful beads. It looks like a rosary, but there's only about 10 or 15 beads. And it's clipped with a little pin, and you can just clip it onto your belt. And it has enough room on there that you can pull the beads up or pull them down. And they're called sacrifice beads. Some of you are familiar with those. St. Therese, her father made them for her as a young girl, and all her and her sisters used them. So during Lent, whenever we did an act of charity or an extra prayer, an act of kindness, you pull one of the beads up. And so you can see how many sacrifices you can make that day, 10, 15 sacrifices a day. If you did something bad, you have to pull one down. So the idea was to pull as many up towards heaven as possible. So help your child develop their interior life, their prayer life. Teach them how to pray. The family rosary, I know many families do the family rosary. We did it on occasion. We didn't have a set time, like after dinner. Some families do that, and that's a wonderful thing, to do a decade a day, keeps the devil away, or to do a whole rosary each day. It's great. We actually never did that. My dad was in one Legion meeting, and his meeting was Tuesday night. My mom's Legion meeting was Monday night, and then ours were on Saturday. So we were all saying the rosary you know, on a regular basis, and sometimes when we traveled in the car, we would say the rosary together, and sometimes at night we would maybe do a rosary, but it wasn't every night after dinner, which, looking back on it, it would be nice maybe if it was. So, I mean, if you do that, I think that's a great idea. But just keep that in mind. We also had a retreat every year that we went on in Malvern, Pennsylvania. It was a Legion of Mary retreat. And from the time I was a teenager, I went on this retreat every November, the first weekend in November. And that was a very good opportunity for me every year to go on retreat, and my sisters would go as well. So I think that really did help develop our prayer life and interior life to have a silent retreat one weekend a year. So consider trying to get the kids on retreat maybe once a year. Confession, I would say one of the best things you can do for your kids is take them to confession on a regular basis, at least once a month, especially during the teenage years. Just take them to confession. There's graces that they can get from going to confession. I think what happens is a lot of times kids, they just don't go to confession sometimes for years at a time. And I think what happens is sin begins to cloud the window of their soul, so they can no longer see the vocation God is calling them to. If you take in the regular confession, I think that can help to keep the window of their soul clean so that they can see what God's vocation is. So regular confession, I think, would be very good. I always like going on that retreat because I could go to confession. And then many times on Mondays when my dad would pick me up from school, we would go in Germantown, Pennsylvania. About 10 minutes from there was the National Shrine of the Miraculous Medal. And so they had confessions like almost like all day long, 24 hours a day on Monday. They had the perpetual novena, the Miraculous Medal. So we go to the novena, go to confession, and then drive home. So the interior life. First, my parents always went to Sunday Mass. They also went to daily Mass. From the time I can remember as a little kid, they were going to daily mass, they would go to mass usually at like 6 in the morning or 6:30, get home, wake us up, have breakfast for us, and then send us off to school. My dad actually drove us to school most of the time as well. But that, I guess, was a great example for me, seeing my mom and dad go to daily mass. I mean, that, again, example was just so powerful. So when I was in high school, maybe it would have been 13 or 14, I said one day, well, when you go to mass, I want you to wake me up. I'll try to go with you. And so then I did that almost every day during my high school years. I went to daily mass with them, and then sometimes my sisters would go as well. So that, I think, was a big help to me, the mass, the rosary. The next letter is O, and that stands for being an Orthodox Catholic. You just have to have the faith, always in line with the Holy Father, with the Pope, and to just be faithful, be a loyal Catholic, follow all the teachings of the Church. I know that when parents follow God's teachings, teachings of the Church, that can make a big difference as well. Because, as you know, the more we know about God, the more we can love Him. So the more you know the truth about God, and don't fall into, like, all the dissident theologians and liberal theologians, the better off yourselves and your kids will be. The Bible says the truth will set you free. And Orthodoxy is a means to an end. It's a means to holiness. It's not an end in itself. But I think that being faithful, loyal to the teachings of Christ and the Church can make a huge difference in the lives of your children. The next letter, second to last letter, is N. That stands for now. To really make the commitment now to do God's will in your own life. And I love the Hail Mary so much because in the Hail Mary we say, pray for us sinners now and at the hour of our death. You know, we need God's grace right now. Sometimes people are they think too much of the past, or they worry too much about the future, but just try to live in the present right now. I love that saying, do your best and God will do the rest. I think you could summarize all this by just saying, do your best and God will do the rest. So right now, just try to do God's will every day, whether it be the dishes or the laundry or cooking the meal. That's where holiness is found. It's not found in running off to Africa to become a missionary, even though some people are called to that. But your vocation really is to get up every day and go to work or go to school or to take care of the home or to cook the meals or to clean, to take care of the family. That's how you become a saint, is by doing the duties of your state in life and just doing them to the best that you can. So realize that just do God's will right now, and every moment is a new opportunity to show God that you love Him. So every day, do that. And if you do God's will right now, as the time passes, then you'll be doing God's will each day, as each day unfolds. The last letter is S, and that stands for sanctity, or becoming a saint. And that's one thing you should realize in a vocation, that really the main thing is not to, let's say, be too concerned about, you know, what vocation the child grows up into, but the main thing is that the child becomes a saint that God is calling them to be. And sanctity is the universal vocation. That's everyone's vocation, to become a saint. By our creation, by our baptism, and we are called not just to be good, but to become holy. To be perfect as the Heavenly Father is perfect. The vocation to become a saint can be achieved through the priesthood, religious life, single life, or married life. That's the universal vocation. That's everyone's calling. I think that's the thing to emphasize with your kids, that your goal in life is to get to heaven. Your goal in life is to become a saint. And if you as a parent have that, and if you're really committed to that, then the kids will sort of naturally, I think, pick up on that too. You know, when you fly in an airplane, the pilot says, you know, before we take off, your cabin pressure changes, the mask will drop. It says, put on your own mask first, and then help your child with his or her mask. I think it's the same thing with the spiritual life. If you want your kids to become a saint, to do God's will, you put on your own mask, your own spiritual life, make sure you're close to God, and then you'll be able to help your kids with their own spiritual life. So sort of in looking at my own mom and dad, I would say one thing they did provide for us was a truly loving environment. Our house was always
peaceful. You know, I don't know why. Maybe there's a lot of phlegmatics in my family. I don't know. But our home was always filled with love, joy, and peace. I mean, there were a couple exceptions. But most of the time, it was a place where you looked forward to coming back to. So try to create that in your own home, a place where when the kids are having a rough day at school, they know they can come back to the safe refuge of the family. So try to create an environment where there's a happy home, a loving home filled with joy and peace. And it was a Catholic home. It was sort of a Catholic atmosphere. It was never really overtly Catholic. You know, we had maybe a statue of Our Lady and the picture of the Sacred Heart. But my home was not the Catholic shop, okay? The Catholic shop was where they worked, and they had tons of Catholic stuff. But at the home, we did have Catholic things, but it wasn't a museum or a shrine in the home, even though I think having some very tasteful, beautiful religious art is very important to passing on the faith and make sure your kids have pictures of the Sacred Heart and the Immaculate Heart in their home. But for my family, I could say that with my mom and dad, the supernatural, they were living the faith so beautifully that the supernatural became natural. It was just the air you breathe. It was just a Catholic atmosphere, a Catholic environment of somebody had a headache, you give mass for them, but you tell them to offer it up as well. Or, we didn't eat meat on Fridays during Lent, and we had the straws in the crib during Advent. We had the sacrifices we made during Lent. We did try to live the liturgical season as best that we could. And I would say primarily what helped me was the example of my own parents, seeing them go to Mass each morning, seeing them pray the rosary. They both wore the miraculous medal, and seeing them involved in the Legion. We did have the enthronement of the Sacred Heart in our home. Growing up, we have things that you have more advantages than I did, because we even have the vocation chalice now, where the vocation chalice comes to your house, and that would be a great thing, to pray for vocations when that chalice comes to the home. We never had really the Pilgrim Virgin statue of Our Lady of Fatima come to the home, but that would be a great thing too. Once a year, sign up to have that statue come to your home, pray the family rosary together when the statue is there, vocation chalice, the enthronement of the Sacred Heart. One of the things that I just thought of was, we were very close to some priests and religious sisters growing up. One of our dear friends, his parents had passed away, and so Father Lindacki came to our home for all the holidays. He was always with us on Thanksgiving, Easter, Christmas, New Year's Day, all the major holidays. And so having a priest come to the home for dinner on a regular basis was a great blessing, because I was close to him. Just a great example as a priest, a very wonderful, wonderful person. He's been ordained over 40 years now, so a terrific person. And his sister is a nun, so she would come over to the house as well. And to see the examples of these wonderful religious priests and sisters, I mean, that's a great thing to foster a vocation in the life of your own children. We also, after that, met some other wonderful priests of the Legion of Mary, Father Bradshaw, who was a missionary in Russia and Iceland. I got to meet him when I was a teenager. That made a big impression on me. Got to meet and spend a lot of time with Father Aidan McGrath, who was a Colombian missionary who had been 3 years in communist prison cell in solitary confinement when he was arrested by the communists. He was 30 years a missionary in China before he was arrested by the communists. So I got to meet him, got to meet some wonderful Legion priests that were just a big influence on me as well. So keep that in mind. If you know nuns, invite them to the home, priests, or myself, Father Jack, to come over to be with the family. I think that can help to foster vocations, God willing. So I would just say these ideas, take them for what they're worth. Hopefully some of these things will be helpful to you. But to realize that, it's a grace from God. If your child is called to religious life, that's a special grace. The vocation would have to come from God. But your job is to at least create the environment where your child can hear God calling them. So try to remove some of the obstacles. Protect your children from the evil influences that are out there, like the bad movies, the bad TV shows, the bad websites, the bad books that might be that they might come across. So you want to preserve their innocence as long as you possibly can. Preserve your child's innocence, protect them from all the evils and the onslaughts of society, and then try to promote goodness and beauty and truth within their home. Create that Catholic environment. Make sure there are good books to read, the lives of the saints. And I love reading C.S. Lewis when I was a kid. I love reading Tolkien and The Hobbit and these wonderful things. And so try to create an environment, you know, with Catholic literature, Catholic culture, Catholic music, things that are thoroughly wholesome, and even secular things that are good. And I loved growing up reading Sherlock Holmes. I mean, I read every one of his short stories. I mean, I loved those kind of things, the detective stories. So those are very good growing up. So there's many things you can do to foster the vocation. Realize it's a gift from God, it's a grace from God, and pray. If you pray, Lord, you know, a good prayer is, Lord, if it's your will, choose, you know, one of my sons for the priesthood or one of my daughters for religious life. I mean, most everybody's called to get married. You know, 90% of people are called to marriage, so most likely your kids are called to marriage. However, there are kids that are called to the priesthood or religious life, and that is such a wonderful joy that God does bless your family, you know, with a priest or a nun. That is such a great blessing. Why don't we have a chance for you to ask a couple questions or to make a few comments, and hopefully some more things will come to me as you ask questions or make your comments. Any questions or comments?
I'm always trying to find what is your insight
into
that.
Well, I think you said the right word is balance. You know, you want to encourage, but obviously not force. I think sometimes you get opposite extremes, discouragement on one side and forcing or pressuring the other on the other. I mean, I think you have good common sense, and that you'll be balanced, and that you'll encourage and foster it and create the environment where hopefully that vocation can flourish if it truly is a vocation from God. And I see this more and more in these beautiful families that we have in the parish. I think we're going to have a lot of vocations, I think, as these kids grow up and in your wonderful families, and see such a loving moms and dads, families that really live the faith, practice the faith, go to church, live the faith in their home. And somebody once said, never push a person to do something, but always pull them by your example. I think it's a good way to look at it. If you push somebody, they go that way. If you pull them, they come closer. Like, be the magnet. Pull the person to daily prayer. Pull the person to the rosary. So my parents did it. Going to Mass. I would see them going to Mass, and they never said, okay, you have to go to Mass every day. But I saw that they went, and I was attracted to do that. But altar serving, I think, would be very good for him. And as the kids, after they make their first communion, to be an altar boy, I think that can really foster that. And then, with the girls, they could sing in the choirs. They could do other things, especially through some of the children's groups, visiting the nursing homes, the shut-ins, visiting newly baptized babies. Try to get the kids involved in the faith that way as well. So I would just say, be balanced. You know, don't, on the one hand, don't force it. On the other hand, don't discourage. But just say, no, if you became a priest, I'd be so happy. You know, that's probably the best way to answer that. Those are wonderful things. I would definitely recommend the Legionaries of Christ, Regnum Christi. There's so many wonderful groups that the church now offers for people to grow in holiness, for the parents and then for the kids too. Yeah, I think some young men are, you know, ready to go off to the seminary in the high school age. Others maybe later in college age. But I think definitely Legionaries of Christ, Regnum Christi is a wonderful group. A lot of my families that I know over the years are about an Opus Dei, and that's a wonderful group as well in fostering holiness among the parents. And then many other organizations as well. Third Order groups are so good. And so my own family was Legion of Mary. Other families, you know, could be Knights of Columbus or other organizations. Yeah, Joanne? That's true, because it does come a time when the child does have to say, yeah, this is not just my parents' faith, this is my faith, and I'm committed to it, I'm willing to go knock on the door, I'm willing to go share it. Yeah, I think it's one of the secrets of why, you know, you can look around, who are the strongest people in their religions? It's those that are evangelizing. Jehovah's Witnesses and Mormons are very strong in their faith. So the more active a Catholic is, the better. Because if our faith is
stagnant. You know, if we don't share it, it becomes stagnant, and we begin eventually to lose it. That's a great question. As I was driving back this afternoon, or actually this evening, I called my mom. I said, "Mom, I'm going to give this talk in about a half an hour." It's 7:30. I was on 66. So I said, "Mom, tell me some things about, you know, how you think you fostered the vocation and everything." I think that they would always say things like, "Well, you know, do whatever God calls you to do in life. You know, whatever you do, we'll be very proud of you. Whatever you do, become a missionary or a chiropractor or some of those different
garbage man."
So I'd make a lot more money as a garbage man, but the benefits aren't as good. But I would say that what I want to do is, let me give you some ideas. I want to use the word vocation. Give you one word for every letter in that word vocation. Hopefully this would be an easy way for you to remember. If you're jotting down any notes, if you can try to remember these words, you might just be able to remember them even if you don't write them down. Hopefully they'll be easy to remember. So how to foster a vocation in your child. The first letter in vocation is V, and that stands for the voice of God. Okay, the voice of God. That's what a vocation is trying to listen to the voice of God. Vocation is not something you choose yourself. It's a calling from God, and you have to then respond to that calling. The church says that nobody becomes a priest of their own decision. It has to be a calling from God. So how do you hear the vocation from God? Well, you listen to his voice. Listen to the voice of God. Remember, it has to be the voice of God, not the voice of the grandparent or the voice of the parent or the voice of the teacher calling you. Those things can help, and that can encourage you to become a priest, but it really has to be God's voice that you're listening to. And as Father Rettler said, there's no such thing as a vocation crisis, because God never stops calling. There's a listening crisis, but not a vocation crisis. There's a listening crisis. Father Rettler says, God does not have laryngitis. God has never stopped calling men to the priesthood or women to the religious life. The problem is, so many people are not listening to the voice of God. They're listening to the voice of the secular world, the voice of the media, sometimes the voice of their parents, which might not be encouraging them to have a vocation. My first assignment, I remember going over to one of the family's homes, and they had maybe two girls and a boy, and the boy was about 5 years old, and I said, "Oh, wouldn't it be great, you know, maybe if he became a priest?" And the mom says, "I certainly hope not." And she, I guess maybe that was her only son, and she wanted to pass on the family name. But one of the things as parents, though, if you're encouraging and open to God's will and open to that, that's going to be much better for the child than to be discouraging. I think woe to the parent that discourages the child from listening to the voice of God. So encourage the child to listen to God's voice. And in order to do this, I would say make sure you have some silence and some prayer time in the family, some silence, because you can't hear God's voice if the TV is always on, if the radio is always on, if the movies are always on, music. There has to be some silence. I think what helped me quite a bit was when I was in college. At Christendom, we had Eucharistic adoration every day from like noon to 5 p.m. They had the Blessed Sacrament exposed in the chapel. And I made a holy hour. I think because of my class schedule, I made one every like Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from like 2 to 3. And I think that was really the big decision when I felt, when I heard the call. I guess maybe God had always been calling me to the priesthood, but I could say I only heard the call during that quiet time when I was sitting before the Blessed Sacrament, just one-on-one with the Lord, and in my heart, it seemed to be more and more that attraction to the priesthood, and that it's something I couldn't deny. I couldn't shake it off, and I just felt that that quiet time, that silence of Eucharistic adoration is when I heard the voice of God. The next letter in vocation is O, and it stands for openness. To be open to the will of God. The will of God in your own life, and the will of God in your child's life. The thing you want to tell them is, just do God's will, okay? Because you don't really know if your child's called to the priesthood or religious life or whatever.
But the best thing you can tell them is, if you do God's will in your life, you'll always be at peace, you'll always be happy. So just do the will of God, either to be marriage, priesthood, religious life, or the celibate life in the world. Do God's will. Be open to doing God's will. This is where devotion to Our Lady is so important, because Mary said, "Be it done unto me according to thy word." St. Joseph said the same thing. Jesus says, "I've not come to do my own will, but the will of him who sent me." The Our Father, the perfect prayer for learning a vocation. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done. If you really pray that prayer, Lord, thy will be done. So encourage your kids. Say that prayer every day. That's the best vocation prayer, I think. The Our Father. If you say, thy will be done. So encourage them to be open to God's will. You have examples in Scripture of St. John the Apostle, who said yes to God. Peter said yes to God, even though he sort of stumbled a few times here and there. There's others that didn't say yes to God, like the rich young man, where Jesus said, if you want to be perfect, go sell what you have and give it to the poor and then come follow me. It says he turned and went away. He went away sad, but he did not follow his vocation. We don't even know his name. We know the names of all the apostles, but he went away into obscurity. The Lord was seemed to be calling him, but he turned away. So encourage your child to be open to doing God's will in their life. I think maybe in the past, in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, maybe the parents forced some of their sons to become priests. Maybe that's one of the reasons why we had so many scandals and problems in the church, problems arising from in the 50s and 60s and 70s. And maybe in some cases, maybe it wasn't God's will for some of those men to become priests. Maybe the parents forced their own will upon the priest. Again, that just could be. I don't know of that many cases. I think in other countries that was more common, like in Ireland and places like that, where the parents said, okay, you're going to become a nun, you guys are going to become priests, and that's it. But in this day and age, I don't think that happens. I think, if anything, the opposite happens. The parents discourage the child from the priest or religious life. The next letter in vocations is C. And that stands for to consecrate. To consecrate your child to the Blessed Mother. I know when I was born and my two sisters, when we were baptized, on the day of our baptism, my parents consecrated us to the Blessed Mother. They did the De Montfort consecration, which says, I am all thine, my queen, my mother, and all that I have is thine. So that my parents always lived the De Montfort consecration, which is the spirituality of John Paul II, Maximilian Kolbe, Mother Teresa. So my sisters and I were all consecrated to our Blessed Mother at baptism. What's interesting, every baby I baptized of the last 700 babies in Holy Trinity, I've consecrated every single one of them to the Blessed Mother. You know, we always say the Hail Mary together. So little do the parents know that we've consecrated all these babies to Our Lady. But hopefully that'll help, because everything is safe with Our Lady. Everything is safe. I mean, if God entrusted His Son to Mary, we should entrust our children to the Blessed Mother as well, to consecrate them to Jesus through Mary. The next letter is A, and that stands for the apostolate. Yet make sure your kids are involved in some sort of an apostolate. There's a saying that if you don't try to share your faith with the world will take you away from God. Father Faber says, if you don't try to convert the world will convert you. So you want to form children that will be involved and be active in the church and be involved in the lay apostolate to evangelize other people. This is the saying, if we don't share our faith, we lose our faith. I think so many times parents raise kids that they figure, well, let's just hope that they go to church. But what happens is they drift away for one reason or another. And if we can form apostolic children that are actually out there trying to bring other people closer to God, then their chance of keeping the faith will be so much stronger. You think of all the Mormons that go off on their missionary work. They're very strong in their faith because they're out there evangelizing and spreading the faith. It's very hard to talk a Mormon out of their faith, right? Because they're so active in spreading the faith. So get your kids involved in an apostolate when they're young. And like growing up, I joined the Legion when I was 10 years old. My younger sister was 8, my older sister was 12. And from that time on, every week we would come together at the Legion meeting, we would pray the rosary, have spiritual reading, discussion, get spiritual formation, talk about the faith, and then we would be sent out to do some sort of evangelization, some sort of active work. We learned how to visit nursing homes, hospitals. One of the works I did as a kid was every week we would visit different nursing homes, and we had 3 different nursing homes that we would go to. And I think that was a major part of my own vocation, because once you're out there trying to bring people closer to God and giving up some of your time to visit the sick and the needy and the poor, I think that can hopefully foster a generous heart within your own children. So I would really recommend trying to get the kids involved in going to a nursing home, visiting people, and doing things like that. The work my mom did, and what she's done for the last over 40 years in her Legion work, has been to visit the Norristown State Mental Hospital. And that's a very challenging work, because you're dealing with the mentally unstable. But she would take us from the time we were 10 years old in there, and we would go and visit the people, and that was quite an experience, because of some of the things you see. You know, people, they're strapped in straitjackets, and they were, some of them had to be strapped in to their beds, but we would pray the rosary with them, say prayers with them, and then the ones that could, we would take them and walk them or wheel them in the wheelchair down to Mass, because they had Mass there every Sunday at the state hospital. So that was one work I did from the time I was a little kid. And then after I got to be about 14 to 16, then we started doing more challenging evangelization work, like on the street corners, where we would take these Catholic literature racks and set them up on the street corners. And people would come by and pick up rosaries, holy cards, miraculous medals. It's called the Book Barrow. And this was a large, even bigger than this cabinet here. And it had 2 large wagon wheels. And we would lift it, and we would wheel it down about 4 or 5 blocks to the center of town in Norristown, Pennsylvania, right next to the bus stop, the train station, and the park. And it was a public street corner, so we could be there. And people would come up, and it said free Catholic literature. And we would have the Knights of Columbus booklets and pamphlets there, and it was great. And I had people, when I was 14, 16 years old, coming up, Jehovah Witnesses, Mormons. One guy came up and said, "Hey, I'm a Jehovah Witness, and you guys are going to hell," and all this stuff. And then I realized he had a brown scapular on. So it turned out to be Joe DeLuca, who became Father Joe DeLuca, and he's the one who goes around the country setting up chapels of Eucharistic adoration. So he was a real character back in the day. And so he was, so we'd meet all sorts of people, but it was great to evangelize people and talk to them. And some amazing stories came out of that too. I remember we one of the legionaries had met in a woman who I guess had been involved in the church when she was a young girl, but had drifted away into a life of dissipation. She'd become a woman of the streets, a prostitute, and had lived alcoholic life, and very sad. She really, at this time that they met her, she was like a bag lady and just was living out on the street. But she's head was Catholic, so we were able to find out a little bit more about her, and eventually she was able to come back to the sacraments, and we were able to get a priest to visit her when she was dying in her little apartment. And so that was a beautiful experience that she did come back to the sacraments in the end. But we probably would not have met her had we not been out there on the street corner. So there's something to be said for that. So encourage your kids to spread the faith. Like here in our parish at Junior Legion, they visit some nursing homes, they make rosaries, they give out the rosaries to kids and to other people. They go visit families with newly baptized babies and take miraculous medals to these families where the newly baptized babies have just been born and baptized. So it's great work. So, I mean, that's one of the best things that you can do, I think, for your kids, is to get them involved in the apostolate when they're young. Next letter is T, and that stands for teaching the faith to your kids. Teaching the faith. Well, the best way to teach a faith is by your own example. I mean, that's how my parents taught us, was primarily by their example. they really just lived the faith. They were, my mom and dad, thank God, are doing so well and they're married 47 years. They really have the faith. I mean, they're very strong believers, they're very loving, very generous of heart. And I think their example was so much more than anything they ever could have said, the holiness of their lives, and I certainly believe they're very close to the Lord. But they taught us the faith primarily through the Legion of Mary every week at the meetings.